So one of my favorite actors has always been Jimmy Stewart. He was a classic. I mean, they don't make them like that very often, right? He could play any kind of character, sort of an any man. In real life, he was the same. A genuine guy, a veteran of World War II who stayed in the Air Force Reserve well after the war, rose all the way to the rank of Brigadier General, by the way. He's actually one of the few men who flew a combat mission in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. He made some great movies along the way, but there's one that just seemed really odd. I mean, maybe you've seen it. The movie was called Harvey. It came out in 1950. Stewart played the lead character, a nice but eccentric sort of guy who told everybody that his best friend was a 6'3" white rabbit named Harvey. He and Harvey went everywhere together. They often stopped for drinks at local bars, and it caused quite a stir, as you might imagine. But all the more so because Jimmy Stewart's character was the only one who could see Harvey. A large part of the movie dealt with the response of others, to include his extended family trying to have him committed. It was a bizarre movie adapted to the screen after a 5-year successful run on Broadway. Jimmy Stewart was nominated for an Academy Award and a Golden Globe, and his co-star, actress Josephine Hull, she actually won the Academy Award and the Golden Globe. The movie was a hit. The story was still pretty strange, though. I mean, a grown man imagining a 6-foot-tall white rabbit. And every time something happened that he'd be blamed for, Stewart's character kept telling everyone, it was just Harvey. Look, I won't spoil the ending in case you want to watch it, but suffice to say, blaming an imaginary rabbit caused Stewart's main character no end of problems. But it was just a movie, right? Just Hollywood. I mean, in Hollywood, you can have imaginary characters that don't match reality. Where you have real problems is when people in real life decide that we all need to live in their imaginations. A friend of mine brought a story to my attention not long ago. It seems that UAB Hospital right here in Alabama just announced that the very first ever uterus transplant resulted in a successful live birth. I am happy for the parents. Nothing in the press release gave me any reason to be concerned. But pretty soon thereafter, other news sources, they began talking about the possibilities of transgenders being allowed to participate in the uterine transplant programs. So, now they're not just removing parts and adding some outside parts. They're also working to restructure and add to the internal parts to try and build something that wasn't ever meant to be and pretend that it is. It's as if Dr. Frankenstein is building his cobbled-together monster, except that this one's not in a movie. This is, in fact, the white rabbit gone mad. I mean, is it just talk, though? Is it just social media what-ifs? Not long afterward, the American Medical Association's Journal of Ethics carried an article examining the efficacy and funding concerns for possible taxpayer-funded uterine transplants in men. In men! The actual American Medical Association quickly tried to distance itself, claiming that the AMA Journal of Ethics is separate from the AMA, but the damage was already done. I mean, besides, why would we think anything other than to assign the article to the actual AMA, since the AMA itself announced back in April of 2021 that it was urging all governors to oppose state legislation that prevented transgender treatments and surgeries on minors. They went on to say such efforts were an intrusion into the practice of medicine. Yeah. Okay, but back to the question of men having a uterus transplant. The opening statement of the article in the AMA Journal of Ethics outlined the premise of the presentation by saying this. You ready? Quote, success in uterus transplants among cis women suggests that trans women and some trans men will also likely have interest in the intervention. It does not seem likely, however, that all parties interested in uterine transplant will have the same standing when it comes to federal subsidies for insurance coverage benefits. So, yeah, let me translate that for you. What it just said in real people language was, if real women can have a uterine transplant, then fake women are going to want one too, and they should have a strong moral argument that federal subsidies ought to be provided to help the fake women live out their fantasies. Folks, we are living in exceedingly stupid times. The imaginary take on life that is going on around us, it requires a suspension of disbelief. You must not only accept that the white rabbit exists, you must also readily claim to see it. Take, for instance, the fact that the University of Texas at Austin hosted a series of workshops not so long ago designed to, in their own words, you ready, quote, use an intersectional approach to foster and develop allyship practices that center on affirming people of color as necessary for affirming women and LGBTQ plus people. Okay, so I had to read that word salad a couple of times to glean what they claim its meaning to be. Basically, that particular workshop says that LGBTQIA plus acronym is a minority class, and that those who fight for racial equality for black citizens need to ally themselves with the gay transgender movement. All in it together, are we? They're equating transgenderism with race. So fighting for fake men is on par with fighting for real men of color. The same center, by the way, at UT Austin has also hosted workshops that focus on heterosexual and monosexual privilege. The basic premise there is that if you believe in traditional relationships between a man and a woman, or if at the very least you believe that you are attracted to members of just one gender, then you have a societal privilege that harms the other members of the acronym community. Did you catch that? If you're straight, or at the very least just good old-fashioned gay, then you're a problem. Does that mean they now have to cut the L and the G out of the LGBTQ? The workshops taught all sorts of new and special made-for-victimhood verbiage like transmisogyny, defined as the intersection of transphobia and misogyny that systematically targets trans women. Or misogynoir, or noir, which is allegedly the intersection of racism, anti-blackness, and misogyny that black women experience. Or just simple sexism, which has been reimagined as the systematic, institutional, pervasive, and routine mistreatment of women and femme people of all genders. Femme people. What's a femme people? For the third time, I had to go look something up. Femme people are allegedly those who are, quote, gender nonconforming and who do not identify as lesbian, transgender, or non-binary. So they're just, what, translucent? So anyway, keep in mind that UT Austin is a public university. These gatherings they're having, these seminars, they're all being paid for with tax dollars. Anyway, it just keeps on going. The acronym keeps on going. The acronym never stops expanding. One online expose informed me that there's over 107 genders now. 107! And for that reason, the acronym has to keep growing. I mean, at some point in the not-so-distant past, we were told as a society that we had to go with the first three letters of the now infamous acronym, the LGB. Then they had to add the T, then the Q. Then it grew with more additions to the 2IA, and then they had to go ahead and add the plus on the end to catch up whatever else couldn't be dreamed of at the time and might be added later. The LGB may defy norms, but the rest of the eternal acronym just defies reality. One very informative website informed me that the ultimate version of the acronym of acronyms may actually be, you ready for this? LGGBBDTTQQUIAAAAAPPP2SNBGVGQNC+. All of which allegedly stands for lesbian, gay, gender, queer, bisexual, bigender, demisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, unsure, intersex, ally, asexual, aromantic, agender, pansexual, panromantic, polyamorous, two-spirit, non-binary, or technically could be number-based, gender variant or gender diverse, gender queer, gender non-conforming, but then again, you have to add the plus on the end to serve as a catch-all. It's silly and sad all at the same time, y'all. It really is. Look, every once in a while, something bubbles up to the surface like a piece of raw sewage and folks try to sell it to us as a batch of fresh lilies, and it just does not work. Well, sometimes you have to look at them and just tell them in love that the thing that they're pushing, the thing that they're demanding that we agree to, it's just the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard of. The absolute stupidest ever, like in the history of ever. Well, look, recently another organization built by women, for women, and about women decided that a fake woman was their best spokesperson. The organization's name is the Endometriosis South Coast. It's a charitable organization formed for the sole purpose of providing support to women who have been afflicted with endometriosis, a disease that affects the tissue of the uterus. I'm sure they do good work. It's certainly a worthy cause. And then they jump the shark and Endometriosis South Coast notes that Steph Richards, a transgender, a biological man who believes that he's a woman, would now head up the organization as the new CEO. It wasn't enough that they put a fake woman in charge of a real woman's charity. They had to also run an announcement with the fake woman next to a statement that read, you ready for this? Quote, isn't it ridiculous that I've got to my 40s before any medical professionals even mentioned endometriosis? Well, Steph, that's because you're a dude, and dudes don't get endometriosis. These are indeed stupid times. But look, too often the problem lies not with those who create the acronyms, but with those who sit by and just nod approvingly as the acronym continues to be built. In a never-ending fear of being labeled homophobic, transphobic, or dysphobic-phobic, the world mollycoddles the acronym builders and the truth deniers and the uterus transplanters. I don't consider myself to be transphobic. I don't. I'm not. That would mean that I have an extreme or irrational fear or aversion to something. I'm not scared of the acronym crowd. I just simply disagree with them. I do not believe that God makes mistakes. For someone to say they were born in the wrong body and must therefore be surgically altered automatically presumes the Creator made a mistake when He created the creation. I don't see it that way. I also believe, by the way, that the faith in a living God is fully compatible with science. Male and female are easily discernible, even to the most unscientific of minds. But at the same time, science can prove it. Science can take the mummified remains of a long-dead ancestor, identify them from a biological standpoint without too much trouble. It's not just a matter of external physiological study either. The internal organs are biologically different between men and women. There's that pesky uterus again. The chromosomal makeup is unique from male to female. Muscle fiber is often different. Bone structure is different. Look, we may live in stupid times, but smart folks still exist, and so does faith, and so does science, and we are not required to nod our heads in awkward acquiescence to the acronym crowd. And that does not make us mean-spirited. There's a vast difference between not condemning and being forced to condone. So here's the thing. I simply disagree. Don't use my tax dollars, don't try to transition our kids, and don't scream when I don't use your pronouns. I won't use them. I simply just disagree. But I'll tell you too, there's also sort of a grandiose immaturity to the transgender movement. I'm following my truth. I want what I want because I say so. It's childish in so many ways. Adults are supposed to grow out of their immaturities and naivety and irrationalities. Pretending that something is other than what it is does not make it so. But unlike the innocence of Jimmy Stewart's character in the movie Harvey, the LGBTQIA plus acronym movement is anything but innocent. There's a vitriolic streak in the middle of it. You will believe what I believe or I will make you pay. You will help me become what my imagination says or I will lash out at you. You will help me cobble together my grievances to make someone pay for my alleged victimhood. You're going to use the world's finest medicine to make me appear to be that thing which I can see in my mind. And just like that, children are mutilated for life. And men participate in women's sports and win women's beauty contests. Tax dollars pay for workshops that define traditional and very real heterosexual relationships as being the archetype of oppression, who lords it over their privilege, over the lives of the ever-expanding list of gender identities that no one even knew were a thing 5 minutes ago. This is not healthy. Mature societies do not do this. We cannot simply say that what is not real is real and expect that society will just get on board and celebrate. We need to bring this ugly fake world to a close and bring healing and restoration to those whose lives have become enslaved by the belief that their white rabbit is somehow real. So let me tell you, there's a whole lot of imaginary white rabbits. Jimmy Stewart's imaginary white rabbit friend Harvey was harmless, even entertaining. It made his character seem innocent, almost childlike. When we were kids, we all probably fought with imaginary bad guys and played with imaginary friends. But like the Apostle Paul said in his letter to the Corinthians, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. But listen, the world in which we live right now is being bombarded by people who want us to believe that their white rabbits are real simply because they say so. They live in a world of imagination. It's both maddening and very sad all at the same time. But with that said, let me shift gears here. The very notion of transgenderism, like I said before, is to say that somehow God made a mistake. He meant to make a person one way. Somehow he goofed up and made something wrong. I don't believe that. Not for a second. I submit that what the liberal progressive world desperately wants to call gender-affirming care is anything but affirming. In fact, if anything, it's gender non-affirming. I believe that when God made each of us, he made the best version of each of us. Maybe, just maybe, folks should spend less time affirming what is not and more time affirming what is. You tell a kid with gender dysphoria that they are the best version of themselves the way they were born, and you see no reason to change that. That each one of us is fearfully and wonderfully made. In Jeremiah 29, we're told that God spends time making individualized plans for each of our lives that involve blessings, not curses, a future and a hope. Why would he spend that much time making plans for something that was a mistake? Chasing the imaginary character, that needs to remain a part of the fictional world. Bottom line, God does not make mistakes. That's my philosophy.